So we've been talking a little bit about the question of Maris Alai, and what I'd like to just kind of put into a context, we'll just say a little bit more about it, and then we'll look, time permitting, at some of what some contemporary postmen have written, this post-20th century postmen have written about the practicalities, and what is involved in the issue. And what we'll see, ultimately, is that there is a question to what extent we are empowered to actually employ tools of kfiya, of actual compulsion, considering the fact that a get has to be given willingly. So we'll have to figure out what counts as kfiya and what doesn't. That's a topic that, God willing, we'll get to next week. But assuming that there is some issue with actually employing kfiya, whatever that means, because of the major machlokas that's involved, both of those who disagree with the Rambam and those who disagree with what the Rambam actually is willing to allow. So because of that, ultimately we'll see that there is a great hesitancy to actually employ kfiya, but at the same time there clearly are other issues here. So a lot of that then is going to come down to what kind of values do we want to transmit? That if there are values that are at stake here, even if kfiya is not actually a tool that we have because of the concerns of Gemarusa and Ratzon, so then at least we are left to convey a certain message, whether we call that a chiyuv l'garish, whether we call that a mitzvah l'garish, there's a difference between the two that we'll have to see, but apparently we're left with society conveying a certain message. So when we say that there is a mitzvah or a chiyuv l'garish, so it means at least that Beis Din is transmitting a certain values message to this husband and saying that, listen, this is what we think you should be doing, and here's why. So it's very instructive to see how the poskim have addressed that issue. And in addition, how that plays out halacha l'maisa in terms of what we are actually able to do. So I've hinted to you a couple times that when we talk about, let's say, going to rallies or things like that, so we're not necessarily working under the assumption that that is kfiya, and therefore what is it? So essentially it's the community trying to make a value statement. That we're saying that this is what we think of a person who's going to leave his wife stuck in this situation, even if we don't necessarily have the tools of kfiya. So in terms of understanding what that statement's about, so what we're seeing here is very relevant to understanding those questions. So just to then basically, because of constraints of time, we'll assume that today will be the day that we'll try to finish off all these points, and recognizing that there are always many more avenues to explore, but we'll have to make do with what we can. So in terms of the question, so we've seen that there is a major machlokas whether or not Maos Alai is grounds for kfiya, with the Rambam saying that it is, and others disagreeing, and all kinds of permutations in between. We mentioned that there were many views in the Rishonim as to how to understand the different mixtures of possibilities here in terms of waiting for a year, in terms of losing the ksuba, but not losing the ksuba, a lot of nuances if you wanted to make a chart in terms of what kind of property she gets to hold on to, what kind of property he gets to hold on to. When does tfisa make a difference if you're already holding something and the other party wants it? So there are a lot of nuances. It's interesting, the idea that she should go without a ksuba, right? That's the Rambam's premise, that yes, we're kofa him to divorce, but without a ksuba. So why should that be? Why should she lose out on the ksuba in such a case? Any thoughts about that, Arya?
In order to remove the possibility that she's doing it for ulterior motives?
So that's one issue, whether it's a chicken or egg question, what comes first. But as we saw, that there is this major concern that we saw, for example, Tosfos Rid seems to be pretty explicit about this, that the Tosfos Rid would really agree with the Rambam almost to the last minute, but then not go that far. It seems like because he understands that we have to worry about the possibility that it's not really Maos Alai, but it's really that she's interested in someone else. And then we asked yesterday the question, so why do Taka and Rambam not agree with that? And we first asked, why does the Tosfos Rid or other Rishonim not agree with the Rambam? So once we consider their possession, why does the Rambam not agree with that? So we mentioned a few possibilities yesterday. But among the possibilities is that if we take the ksuba out of the equation, maybe then there's less of a motive to claim something that's not totally 100%. So that could be part of it. It could be other aspects as well. Chazon Ish.
No,
Yeah, we were trying to figure out, so why is the Rambam not worried about a false claim? So you mentioned yesterday a couple of answers that you find in the Nosei Kalim and other commentaries to the Rambam. It could be that we just assume the spiritual consequences are so high that she's not going to make a false claim. We spoke about that possibility yesterday. Or it could be that this is, as some suggest, the Rambam is Shitaso, but the Rambam says that Tfias Get ultimately goes to his inner will ultimately signing on. So maybe it's possible to say that his inner will signs on here too, as long as that's what has to happen, and therefore even if her grounds are not 100%, we don't really have to worry that it is a groundless get. That's a possibility as well. And the other possibility as emerges from Tosfos is that if there's no ksuba on the table, maybe then we can assume that she's not going to try to get out of the marriage with a false claim when it means walking away without the ksuba. There are other aspects as well, because an ish notes the Gemara and the Sefer is getting kind of different. What different for?
That was one answer or two answers?
That was really three answers. Right, that we said, just to go over again, that either that because the spiritual consequences, right, she's an ish, so she's not going to want to take that out of her course, which is one possibility. We discussed yesterday that maybe why the Rush not agree with that, because maybe they're too subtle to appreciate this. Two was that the husband will divorce her fully willingly, no matter what it is, because of the Rambam's own premise that ultimately it's all willing. And the third is that we're not worried about her motives because if she's not getting the ksuba, so then that will negate part of the ulterior motivation. So this loss of the ksuba could be explained like that, or it could be explained other ways as well. The Chazon Ish notes, based on the Gemara in Gittin, which I added this morning, that the ksuba, first of all, we know explicitly that the ksuba is there to be a discouragement for the husband to divorce. And, as the Gemara in Gittin alludes to, it's also there as a reflection of the fact that she wants to stay in the marriage, and now she's being deprived of that, so the ksuba is part of the compensation. So if that's not what's happening, if she wants out, and he doesn't want out, and we're forcing him to let her out, so then perhaps it makes sense that the ksuba shouldn't come along with that. The ksuba is not really acting in its general role, if that's what's going on. And there are other issues that are related to that that address the other questions of property, so gifts that he gives her. So did he give her these gifts knowing that she may take them out of his household someday? Or did he give her gifts under the assumption that they would be used in the household? There's a pretty extensive literature. These questions come up all the time. Halacha l'maaseh, these become very relevant because, again, the question of Ma'aseh Alai, so we mentioned that even if you don't follow the Rambam, but that has other ramifications of halacha. So one of the ramifications that it has, just that you should be aware of, is in terms of the marital property, how the marital property is distributed by the bat din. So we see that the Rishonim were addressing the property that she brings in, the property that he gives her, the ksuba. All of these issues are also affected by whether or not Moed Salai is invoked. And therefore, that's going to have ramifications for how the property is distributed also. So even if you have a get that's happening without kfiya, but Moed Salai is a part of the equation, so that could affect a lot of other issues that go to the divorce settlement. Now, we saw also that there's some debate, even within the Rambam, how far the Rambam is willing to go in terms of what he would consider Moed Salai. Sitz Eliezer has a tshuva where he suggests, this is in Chelet Kesvav, that the language of Moed Salai is one that has to be instinctive and one that has to be essentially, you have no choice. That's what we saw from the Tosfos Rig language, that she's basically anusa, that she feels that she just can't stand him. So we credit the subjectivity of it, okay, that's what it is. But we also have some kind of definitional requirements, according to Sitz Eliezer, that it has to be something that you feel you can't get over. You feel that it comes instinctively, not something that somebody else poisoned your mind. That becomes a lot of discussion about in the literature, that people interfere with a relationship, and they say, come on, don't you think he's a jerk? And then she says, now you realize it, now you say, yeah, Tak, I do think he's a jerk. So the poskim are concerned about whether or not that fits into the definition of Moed Salai or not. But the Sitz Eliezer feels specifically that it has to be something that is essentially uncontrollable. But subjective, but uncontrollable, that's what he thought the language of the Rambam and the language of the Tosas Rid was getting it.
How does this interact with the problem that the psychological issue of like the battered woman syndrome, that she stays in the marriage even though she doesn't like the person, but she can't get over the, whatever the issues are in the marriage? Her psychology is that she wants to stay for some reason or another. But we realize that she also shouldn't like this person. There should be a problem there.
Right, so that I don't think is in the category of, you know, those who are concerned in terms of external influences, because when there's something demonstrable, there's something that you can see is a reason for a person to have a mimesis, so then that itself will shift the equation significantly. And that also, there were those who felt that it should be grounds for kriya by itself. There are those who argue, you know, it depends on, you know, what category you would associate it with, but those who felt that even without Moshe Lai, that could be grounds for kriya. That was a discussion some of the Rishonim had, and there were elements or reasons to say kriya, reasons not to say kriya, as we've seen. So that's a discussion. There is a tshuva, which, you know, I'll quote from if we have a few minutes, in this sefer Oros HaMishpat by Rav Oshinsky. There's a nice discussion of the topic. So he talks about the situation where the husband essentially plunged everyone into debt, made everyone take on these huge chavos, and she hates him because of that. So that certainly should qualify as a Moed Salai. There can be all kinds of things that bring someone into a situation of Moed Salai. And as you know, it's also Moed Salai can be gradual. You know, one can feel after the course of time has passed that certain activities and tendencies have created a revulsion. But what he's talking about is, should we go further than that? Should we say that maybe under such circumstances there is a objective, visible type of source of mimesis, and therefore if we look to the Tosfos Rid, for example, who we saw yesterday, Tosfos Rid says the issue is that we can't really figure out what it's about, so on the one hand it's true and valid, on the other hand it's something we have to worry might be motivated by something else. So maybe if we can see the motivation, maybe that should be a reason to treat that as actionable Moed Salai, where we should have a fear of the garbage. So that is also a complex point. You know, I think we had this on the Marmar Kol a little while ago, if you saw, that the Rama says that if you have a husband who sees zonos, who frequents prostitutes, so then there is a possibility that that itself is subject to fear. And then the question is, what can we derive from that? The Chacham Tzvi has a truth about that. What can we derive from the idea that such a factor is the reason to be kofet? So what would you think? It happens to be this psak is based on the Aguda. The Aguda suggests a couple of reasons, but just what would you think is, if we say that's grounds for divorce, what would you say?
Sorry. Whatever her motivations are.
Yeah, so how does that translate into a category? Right? Why should his frequenting prosecutes make that something that we should be kofet? Now, by the way, nowadays, so there's a whole other element to this. Nowadays, that also brings about the possibility of mortal disease, which wasn't always perceived as an issue. So there are those who say that it's more than that. There are those who say that that might even be grounds for kedushei tos, that a woman would not expose herself to deadly diseases if she knew that that was going on. So therefore, maybe it's even more fundamental than kfiyah leget. But the assumption that it's the basis, at least for kfiyah leget, so why should that be true? And again, there are the favorite chances, but it touches on a couple of points.
It's illegal in most states.
So
considered a criminal.
Okay, so the fact that he's acting criminally, so I'll mention in a few minutes the Sridiyesh has a tshuva about that specifically. That the idea, let's say the husband is accused of criminal activity, so is that something that takes on its own halakhic category, and is it something which can be built on this psak about roa zonos, possibly? So what else? Criminality is something by itself. Yes?
Well, the fact that he's being dishonored, that to me, with Yisurei Bia, is that
he's in a bargain also, in effect, his spiritual standing. Could
and
be. Okay, yes, very much. So then explore that a little bit. So you say the relationship is damaged, right? So the idea that she finds him repulsive because of this kind of behavior, so that's also a significant factor. Right? And that might tell you a little bit that when there is essentially, that if you want to say this is a kind of mois alai, that basically because he's acting this way, so now she's disgusted by him, and the Rabbah is saying maybe you could be coached on that, then maybe he's kind of hinting at a different category of mois alai. There could be a mois alai where we could say, listen, it's based on behavior that most people would find disgusting, and therefore that's beyond the standard mois alai. You could also say that it's more than that. You could say that because of what that does specifically to her place in the relationship, because this relegates her to a very offensive status, so therefore that creates a different type of impact on the relationship, and therefore the tefillah that Rama is talking about is based on that. The other possibility, which is quoted in the earlier sources, is not one you necessarily would have guessed, that you have to come on to Rosh Hashanah, for example, but that's going to lead to him spending lots of money. And basically he's going to end up depriving his family of support because he's going to squander all his money in this pursuit, in which case one could say that it's a logic that truces would be more readily applicable to a habitual gambler. You know, we'd have such a story in there. The postum also then discussed, so if you say that that's the issue, it's going to create a loss of money and he's not going to be able to support the family. So are we talking about a Ben Sora Mora kind of story here? Some of them invoke that comparison. Are we saying that he's Nido Nal Shem Sofo, that because ultimately he's going to come to squander so much money that he's not going to be able to support his family, so that's what it's based on? So these are all possibilities, but this case of Rolozonos provides a lot of possible models to affect what other cases might be comparable. You know, essentially, just to recap, maybe it's a financial issue, they're going to squander all the money. Maybe it shows that there are types of mois alai that become more objective and more demonstrable. Or maybe it's the emotional distance that he's creating with that kind of behavior that maybe impacts on the marriage in such a way, even without mois alai, that therefore kfiyah is justified based on those circumstances.
Would kfiyah in those circumstances be justified according to the Rush?
According to the Rush, that's a bigger question. So then it becomes the Rush as only the cases in the Gemara. So again, your question would be, should you say that, okay, only literally the cases, or that we can make the cases in the categories?
The cases in the Gemara were more certain objective standards, but if you can add certainly other related offshoots, such as, you know, Rolozonos, as you mentioned, maybe a gambler, could be objective cases where any, say, person would want to associate with.
Right, so it's interesting, especially that the Ramah, we're assuming, doesn't follow the Rambam. So if the Ramah is entertaining this possibility, he's clearly saying it's something closer to the Rush's position. So just to give an example, so I brought, you know, like I said, I brought some things to read to you today. So the Sridi Eish, so Arya mentioned criminality. So the Sridi Eish was asked a question about somebody who was arrested for suspected misbehavior with people. And should that by itself be grounds for kfiya by a get? So just to see how one 20th century posek addressed this. So his language was, Lafi dati, hadavar pashit, sheyesh l'dmoso, dehav tshuva chacham tzvi. As I mentioned, the chacham tzvi has a tshuva analyzing this Rolozonos issue. So practically, what's the halacha there? She'ein l'kofol agarish, that we're not ready to agree to kfiya necessarily. Because it hasn't necessarily been established in a way that is demonstrable. It hasn't been proven that this is actually going on. And he goes on to say that we can't trust the authority that they necessarily have established at the high enough standard. How so? That itself, the arrest itself, he's not ready to say is basis for fear. However, he says, Aval mikol makom yichol olomar mois alai. Right? That basically saying that this itself, this kind of stature, that this issue that he's acted in such a way that has led to him being arrested, so that's certainly a basis to say mois alai. So then what are the consequences of that? So he goes on to say, which if you recall again that we're not actually kofa, but that she doesn't have to be with him. So she can physically separate from him for sure through the court system. But then he goes on to say that you have to be careful what the next step is. He says, Brahma, Fosa Rosa Ramo tells the rabbi he's asking this question. Bahasros Bosh, Akara Pira, there are toes, Amabez and Walk of Fosa Lagarish Kadash Mishra. That you should be made aware that this separation won't necessarily be justification for actual kfiyah. So he should nonetheless side to divorce her at that situation, and that is definitely yashar v'tov. That is definitely the appropriate attitude. The amrosh of hachmas atzmo the suffix that. And so if she wants to enter into that situation, so then that's a reasonable approach, or shows the other. She shouldn't try to use the court to force the get. That would go too far into possibly validating the get. And he goes on to say the Sri Shum Rab Mort said that well Yitzhak Sadhus again, the Gamma get the apostle could get Musa. If they're going to try to use the courts to try to take it to the next step and force the get itself, so then that's going to be a get puzzle. But we should certainly advise him that he should do what's right, what's yashar tov. I think that language is probably significant here, that that's the value that we want to convey, that she has a certainly grounds for minisus here, and therefore we try to convey to whatever extent we can the message that the divorce would be appropriate. Daniel?
Right. First, I just wanted to know, does that mean that also, meaning now everything's going to be, meaning if she says Mosalai for Zolot, right, is, you know, maybe they just need to work out the relationship, meaning they're just going to fix out things. It doesn't necessarily mean she has to get divorced to him. There's just something, you know, some issues. That can make it lighter in a sense, won't it? Meaning if you allow a victim, also right there, to be co-parent.
Well, the question is, you know, is this maybe a more objective kind of Moed Salai? That maybe there are forms of Moed Salai, which some of the Rishonim certainly did perceive that way, that they perceived it as something which, on the one hand, like we said, on the one hand has an objective, well, subjective creation to it, but has a recognizable reality, that we can't force them to be together. But at the same time, we don't want to necessarily rush to get at that point, because maybe it is something that could be dealt with over time.
Right.
But then the question is, so what happens when it becomes clear that that's not the case? So then, is that going to be, so that's what the post will discuss as well. So is that something that justifies going to the next step of kfiya? Or do we say that still kfiya, we don't have necessarily the elements to allow for, but once the situation becomes more and more clear, that's what we're talking about, so then it becomes a basic moral obligation to act on that, and we therefore convey that message to them. So,
right.
I mean, certainly the Beis Din conveys that message. And, yeah, so we'll get into more details next week about what's called kfiya and what's not kfiya. But, so certainly the attitude of, let's say, Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Willig, that when we talk about a rally, so a rally is basically the voice of Beis Din. And the rally should not be taken as an act of kfiya, but it should be taken as the community saying that, listen, the Beis Din thinks that you're not acting morally, and therefore we're telling you loudly that you're not acting morally, and this is what we think you should do.
Sorry, and then the second thing real quick was, half these issues don't apply if he's being designed with somebody else. Does it apply, are we saying specifically to Zonot, or is there, or would a lot of this apply to just another woman?
You mean in terms of the mominous issue? Wouldn't apply?
The mominous issue, yeah.
Right, but the other point
and,
is...
I'm saying, well,
all right, disease is a newer issue. If the disease comes up nowadays, they say it's been invoked in some contemporary context for a reason to go even farther and to say that it should be a mekach tov. You could say that had the woman known that she was going to be constantly exposed to a mortal danger,
right.
that you could also say, certainly as far as kfiya, you know, disease is a real possibility. So that's a little darker from what the Mishnah says in Ayin Zayin. It seems like it should at least be grounds for kfiya.
Right.
But certainly a lot of the svara does apply. If you stop having an affair, the idea that she's going to be repulsed by him because of that, and that's certainly at least a modus alai, but is it a modus alai that maybe has a little bit more to it, because if there's a demonstrable reality, then maybe that might put things into a different category. So this is a major issue that Poskim have considered, that should we say that you find this in both directions. That you find those who say that even the machmirim, so to speak, who are not willing to be kofa based on Moed Salai, maybe will take a different stance when it is demonstrable. And there are those who say kind of the other way around, that even the Rambam needs something like that. Even the Rambam needs it to be something that is demonstrable. We also discussed yesterday that then it becomes a question of fact. Somebody's my focus and they're basically possibly talking past each other. The question is, are they really in agreement that they're not talking about the same case? So you recall yesterday, we highlighted the fact that the Rush gets very angry at the Rambam and says, how could the Rambam justify kfiyah based on Ma'as Alai, when Ma'as Alai just means that she fell in love with somebody else? So maybe the Rush is therefore describing a different Ma'as Alai than maybe the Rambam was talking about. It's certainly possible to formulate a machlokas like that. We don't know for sure that either side is saying that, especially in the Rambam's case, but it could be the Rambam is defining Ma'as Alai differently than the Rush is, and therefore they're just really talking past each other, and that becomes a part of the question as well.
Really? Yeah, about the case in Syria, someone was brought up for criminal charges?
Yeah, he was arrested in this case. So, that could be very different from someone who was in jail. Someone was arrested, then he has to take everyone on a normal basis. Would that be grounds for more severe action? Or? Yeah, it probably would, because then we see also that if they're not living together, then that could be grounds for FIA, though that's a somewhat controversial point, but theoretically it could be grounds for FIA. So that certainly would affect things. That then the question is, if it's an externally imposed reality, that should be no different than some of the situations that you find. So those poskim, like Shekhar, for example, who thought that not living together is a kal v'chomer from the cases in the Mishnah, would say that's true as well for being in jail. Now that would also lead to a question: how long is the sentence? Is it a life sentence? If they're never going to be able to be together again, then that would certainly have one kind of ramification. Or is it a shorter sentence? And then the question becomes: so we say, okay, so it's not a permanent distancing, but she's disgusted by it, so this may be a more modus alai kind of question. So you find things going in both directions here. You find on the one hand those who say that the rabbi also requires more, and you find that those who say that others will agree with the Rambam when there is more. So how does the Ramah fit into this? If you saw the Ramah, the very important Ramah, so on the one hand, we just mentioned the Ramah about Roa Zonos as a possible basis to say that if there's more going on, then that could be more actionable. At the same time, the Ramah more explicitly, in Ayin Zayin, is taken as a disagreement with the Rambam. Because there, the Shulchan Aruch has taken it to the Shulchan Aruch, copies the language of the Rambam, but doesn't go so far as to say that you should actually be kofa divorce. And the Ramah also is working off that premise. The Ramah says that we will take further action without actually being kofa divorce if it's ma'is alai with an amasla mehurer. The question is, what is an amasla mevureres? Amasla in general in Talmudic usage means that you're not just saying something, but you have an explanation. And so you find that in different places, the halacha. For example, he talks about whether a woman is, let's say a woman claims to be an Ida and she really isn't. So then the Gemara talks about that if she now wants to establish herself as a non-Nida, so what do we believe? Do we believe her when she said the first time that she wasn't either, or do we believe her now when she said she was just joking around the first time? So the thing is, it depends. If she has a good reason to explain why she said it, and we could understand why somebody would make up that story rather than actually being true, so then we believe, okay, it wasn't true then, and it's true what she's saying now. So sometimes we find in halacha, it's called an amasla, you need some type of a substantiation. So the Ramah says that he's willing to give more recognition to a ma'is alai with a amaswa, but still is not allowing kfiya. So what does that say to this whole story? So you could say that it means still that maybe there's a difference between an amaswa and something that we actually can observe. That amaswa means that, okay, she has to say a little bit more than ma'is alai, she has to substantiated, but it still could be something that she's making up. It still could be something that she's decided she's more interested in somebody else, and therefore she's giving a explanation of what it is, but it's still not something we can visibly look at. While something that the whole world can see that is demonstrable, so then that might mitigate any concern that it's made up. And again, these are things that you see in secular law as well, the whole question of grounds for divorce and what are the consequences of insisting on grounds. and the like, and irreconcilable differences, what becomes irreconcilable differences, these are not concepts that are unique to Allah, but this is what you find coming up in a lot of the secular law as well. So you see, for example, the Meiri, which I put on the day's list if you had a chance to see it. So the Meiri has a more constrictive reading of the Rambam, that the language of the Meiri is Afu Shifas Kidoli HaMachavir, the Rambam, Pirshu Rabosai B'Divrehem Dalfik Shetorin Kafman Hadin, that there has to be some kind of a legal basis for it. So Lomar Sha'af Anu Makirigo Shehu Roi Lemos Mahmas Rofi Kususo V'Hafsid Inyana. We see that there's something pretty nasty about him, but there's something that observable that we can see that would be a basis for it. So then, that's when the Rambam would agree that it is appropriate. So this would be another answer, basically a fourth answer to why the Rambam is not worried about what the Tosafot was worried about, that he's specifically talking about situations where it's clear that there's another basis going on. And again, every time you say something like this, you're possibly narrowing the gap of disagreement between some of the Rishonim, because it could be that they're just talking about different cases. So this is a matter, just to read to you a little bit more. So this is a big issue, that because of all of these complications and because of all of these status, so contemporary poskim nowadays are very hesitant to allow straight-out tefiyah based on simple mo'isalah. However, there are a lot of other elements. One we'll talk about next week about what is considered tefiyah. And also, even if something is considered tefiyah, so if there are other tsirufim, if there are other factors, so then that may become more of a basis to take action. That together with the fact that the Rambam says tefiyah is possible and there are other issues as well, and we're not sure if this is tefiyah, so that sometimes we find poskim who are willing to act on this. And again, the idea that we're trying to convey a communal message, even if we can't actually do tefiyah, but we can rally and we can say something loud. So here it's interesting in this sefer, the quote from Shaul Yisraeli. Shaul Yisraeli was one of the great Gedolei HaPoskim of the religious Zionist world. The main posek of Eretz Chemda. If you're familiar with the Eretz Chemda Kolo, which has a lot of halachic rulings in Israeli society. So just a quote from here. So the Shaul Yisraeli writes the sefer Mishpatei Shaul. So yes, it's true that the claim of Moed Salah is not enough to allow kfiyah. But despite that, there's an obligation to divorce. And that's true for many reasons. Right? So we're not going to force you to be with him physically. So that we know already in the Gemara. So MK, who's Shari Boisha? So now he's without a wife. So he can't marry anyone else. The fact that Madayan became Mitzvah Skruvu, especially if he hasn't fulfilled Mitzvah Skruvu. So from his perspective, that's one reason why we should force him to leave such, we should tell him he has an obligation rather to leave such a marriage. That's as if we're focusing on his concerns. But then he goes on to say, Tom Nosof, Me'achar Shaisha Lo Limo, since the wife is not with him, right, so that is midas tov, that he's basically tying her up for no reason. And I think this point here is one of the major elements behind how we relate to this issue today. That essentially what we're dealing with here is what boils down to basically cruelty, that there isn't any benefit for the husband and there is tremendous suffering for the wife. So therefore that constitutes midas tov. So what does midas tov mean practically? So in general, midas tov, the Gemara tells us that, first of all, we know from the Torah that stone represents the evilest of the evil. And the Gemara defines stone as this attitude, on the one hand, it's a perspective of negative chesed, the opposite of chesed, but the idea that even when you're not getting anything out of it, somebody else is suffering, somebody else would get it, and you wouldn't be hurt to provide benefit to somebody else. That's called midas tov. And the Gemara actually uses the language Kofin Almida stone. So we mentioned beforehand that maybe that's what the Rashbam and Baba Basra was getting at when we talked about cases where we are Kofin, and you get and you describe a situation like that, and it's interesting to draw the comparison to Kofin Almida stone. But there's more to it as well. Kofin Almida stone, even whether or not it actually enters into halachic fear, when the Gemara says Kofin Almida stone, it means that it is the opposite of Jewish values. It means that it expresses something that repulses us as a society. Remember my teacher by Dr. Aaron Levine, Dr. Tzadik Lebracha, so he was of the opinion, which is what to discuss, that you know, the Gemara says, the Gemara applies Zenen of Zolachasar in different ways. Sometimes it applies it in ways where it's actually cruel, where somebody else could benefit, and there's no cost to you one way or another, and you just want to stop somebody from benefiting. And sometimes it's less overtly cruel. The Gemara talks about if you want to charge someone for something where it doesn't really cost you anything, so you're not allowed to charge. So that's less cruel. Everybody wants money, so you understand why you want money. But the Gemara is saying that still you're not entitled because you didn't lose anything. So one could say that there are two different categories. The first category is mamish cruel. The second category is not cruel. It's just not justified. But Rabbi Levine assumed that the language of Kofin Almida Stone is applicable in both cases. So therefore, he had a chiddush lahalacha that, let's say, if you're offering somebody a ride, and you're going to the same place anyway, you were totally going ready to go there, you paid for the gas and everything, and you happen to pick this person up along the way. So he assumed you're not allowed to charge them at all for this ride, because it's exactly what you'd be doing anyway. If, before you left, the two of you said, listen, we both want to go to the same place, let's split the cost, that'd be different. But he said that if you were totally prepared to pay, and now you ended up giving somebody a ride, it doesn't cost you a cent more, so you're not allowed to charge. So okay, that much is probably what the Gemara basically says. But he took it further and said that even if a passenger says, listen, I want to pay, then you're still not allowed to accept it. Why can't you accept it? Because the statement, Kofin Almida Stone, what that tells us is that this is completely against Jewish values. That this is not something you can charge for, and the idea of charging for it is repugnant to us. So therefore, even if he comes and offers you, you shouldn't take it. So to hear, that's what emerges in this context, that even if we're not in a position to be a baguette, but this behavior is repugnant. So therefore, the best thing to be conveying that the behavior is repugnant, that this is something that is the opposite of what our whole religion is based on. At the very birth point of our religion, we have Avram and Stone portrayed as two opposites. So our whole faith is Rahmanim, Baishanim, Adon, Chasadim, the descendants of Avraham Avinu. So therefore, we're going to convey in whatever terms possible that this is something that we're not accepting. Daniel?
So let me ask you, if let's say I'm going with somebody anyway, we're going to Philadelphia for Shiloh Rabba, and afterward we're going to Washington for a wedding. This guy is pretty much going either way. I mean, maybe because I'm there, he's for sure going to go.
Yes, I'm not going to get into too much of that question. A little bit tangent.
Then charge.
Right. There's what to address about that. Maybe we'll address that.
Right.
Right.
Why is
it
not just charging
me? Yeah, I hear where you're coming from. I'm just bringing it up as the example of where you're not entitled to charge because of the lack of chisaron. And over the Levine's point, which itself is a little bit arguable, but his point is instructive for our purpose, that it's not just that you can't ask, but that even a voluntary offer you wouldn't accept because it's repugnant. So this idea that's repugnant, so here, even if we're not going to use kfiyah, but we convey that it's repugnant, and again, so nowadays we have the Bezdin saying such a thing, and we have a rally that the community as a whole makes a statement. The community as a whole says, just like Bezdin has established that this is repugnant behavior, we're also going to say out loud and in front of your house that this is repugnant behavior. So just to see the end of what we say with Lashonos here, so this is very important phrasing. It says, Lefi zeh, had the posek harama, shein kofen osola gairish, that which the Rama says that we're not going to compel gairishin, zehu rakling in din kfiya. That's only, as far as concerned, actual compulsion. Which is not the case in terms of a obligation to divorce, because as long as the husband himself knows that she's not coming back to him, And he's doing this only either because of revenge or because he's trying to squeeze out money. He's trying to extract money. Vada Yeshkan, that definitely is here. Bahabal overall Isser Torah made him a gasha. So therefore that Nida is by definition an Isser Minat Torah. So certainly a Bezdin is in his rights to say that this is wrong, that this is something that we convey what we feel about it. And therefore that's part of the message. Alright?
I'm just curious about here's Sodom, isn't that Zel Chaser? And I wonder if in these situations, so it's true that Zel Chaser regards to, you know, splitting up the house and things like that. Seems to be a bit different than here's Sodom.
Right, so that depends, and that's why these cases are litigated in Bezdin, because sometimes there are legitimate issues, but that's what you need the process for. So the Bezdin is supposed to establish that, okay, as part of the process, here's how things should be divided up. But if you don't have any kind of authority that's telling how it's going to be, you don't have the Bezdin, you don't even have the courts. Sometimes nowadays we deal with situations where it has to be the courts because there's no functioning Bezdin that's going to be able to handle it. So then they may end up in the court, but you have to have an authority that's saying, here's how it's going to be. If one party is going to exert all the control and say, okay, here's how I get what I want, so that essentially becomes extortion. And then even if it's a net-net, but we also see from the din of zed-net-net zed-lo-chaser that it still counts if it's a legitimate profit. Right? So we saw two cases in the Gemara of zed-net-net zed-lo-chaser. One case was that you are trying to make someone suffer even though it doesn't do anything for you. And the other case is it does do something for you, but you haven't earned it. So that's basically extortion, so to speak. So that's Pitas Ksafim that he talks about is also going to be in that category. Okay, so let's take a look at, there is a very long shuvah about this. I'm not going to read you the whole thing, I'm only going to read you one paragraph, but just to give you a little bit of a sense. So Rav Avadja has a shuvah about this. I alluded to this issue, I think, a few days ago. I mentioned what I heard from the Shachar, that Rav Kapach, so when he would get involved in situations, so it was said about him, or he himself said, I don't remember, that he really thought the halacha was like the Rambam, that you should be kofah with Moritz Alai, but because the big machoka, so he would only do so with serif other things, which is what you find in contemporary poskim, that they do it together with other factors. So that was what Rav Kapach did, but he always found something. The point being that he really felt that it was Moritz Alai that was driving him. So I commented, projected that, well, it's also interesting because Rav Kapach was Temanim. So Temanim have a practice of following the Rambam across the board anyway. So maybe it takes on a different quality if Rav Kapach is doing it. So this happens to be the topic of basically three consecutive chuvas in the Abiyah Omer. Long chuvas. Obviously, I'm not going to read them all together. It's definitely very worth reading if you have many hours. But it's very informative. So, Rav Avadja here in this is in Cheder Kimmel, Yedia Omer, in the Eben Ezra, so Simon Yuches, Yutes, and Chav, he's talking about this issue and about a question where Hitaka is talking about a Temani couple. And does the halacha change if that's what we're talking about because of the greater element of relying on the Rambam? So, Simon Yutes, which is the second of the three chuvas just mentioned, so he's all continuing one long conversation throughout these three chuvas. So the title of Simon Yutes is Makomo Shenago Lifso Kai Rambam Gambin Yishvil Aget B'tainis Mois Alai Imenichim Osam Ben Hagam. So should we allow that to continue then if people are following the Rambam Mahalacha? Bin Yechol Lignon came to Eretz Yisrael, but they have Ibis, Shinisu Mekomos Anal, Yolo Acharka Pa'aretz. So should that happen? If the couple, let's say, was married in an environment in which that was a psak, and then they came to Eretz Yisrael, what is it? So how should we handle that? In the first line of this tshuva, he says, Nidon Bidan, the case that he's talking about, Shabnei Hazuk, it's Chatni B'Teman, they got married in Yemen, Heim B'nei Ha'idah HaTemanah, Shekibu Olem Horos HaRambam, so they have accepted all of Shekhan HaRambam across the board. So he takes that point and discusses it, and you may recall that the Rush essentially addressed this, right? That the Rush had said that even though he disagrees with the Rambam, But if the practice was like the Rambam somewhere, so for the end that he thinks it's acceptable, so that's one of the major issues that Rav Adjer talks about in this tshuva. So I just want to skip to the end of Chaf, and it's just very instructive to see the language that he uses here. I'm just going to skip around in the last Os of Simon Chaf. Os on the Dalet, he says, Hamura Mikola Omer. So what emerges from everything we've just discussed in the past 30 pages, Shehol Matsanu Chavev Rabbi Gedol Gatsuber Besen Rishonim Bespirulik Shazarambamzah. We do find other Rishonim who are in sync with the Rambam. There are those who agree with the Rambam. Shekofen is a balagar for Tanis Moshe. But there are Rishonim who agree that there is not only the Rambam, but there are others. V'chein tiknu Rabban Savoroi v'edina d'mesivta. And that was also the institution in the late Talmudic era, the late Amoraic era. V'dogu b'tachamizu ad sof z'man ha'ga'onim. And this was a policy up until the end of the Gaonic era. Karov with Sheish Mel Shana. This was the practice for 600 years to do this. Yasu Maisa Rav, Lachaf Labal, Lahotsu Bitanis Moi Salai. And they did this. They were Kofa based on Moi Salai. Sha'af al Pish Ramei Postum Eim Sovin Kane, even though there are many postum who don't agree with this. The Gam, Aran, the Shulchan Aruch, Sovin Shain Kofa. Shulchan Aruch also said that we don't Kofa. When there are other elements to factor in, Shapir Samchino Zalachalamais. We still do rely on those elements together practically. Skipping a little bit of the Yuchod of Nei Teman, especially if we're talking about a Yemenite couple, Sheinim Zazim, Heros Adam, Machel Sheyomach, Yuzet, that they're going to follow the Rambam on everything, whatever he says. And that's always been their practice to follow this. So too, even after they've come to Eretz Yisrael, where the practice is different, it's appropriate, he says, to let them follow the Rambam. So here it's also a more complicated case, because the wife claims she was married off very young, and she never really wanted it in the first place. She says that even though she never really wanted him, her relatives forced her into it. They used this lashon harki gigas, like the Torah, that they pushed her into it. So that there's another tzirah, that there's also a view that in such a situation already, you could force the husband to divorce based on that. And that also has support among posting. And especially here, you can add many other questions. Right, and we know the Rashbetz, we saw this Rashbetz, if you recall, we spoke about this when talking about the position of the Rambam about Ratzon. When he says, he's referring to the Rush when he says that, but even though there are great Achronim in his time, great Rishonim, who say, She'ain Kofin Bazebedin Moisolai, that we're not going to be Kofin on things not in Gemara like Moisolai, Kval, Mikol Makom, Anan Lo Katli Kani Ba'agmana. Remember we saw this, right? He says that we're not schleppers, we also have authority, we're mostly Kali Basvara, and this is something that is all dependent on rabbinic logic, the aim of dying, all masha, aim of roles, and therefore dying has to do what he thinks is right. V'chein v'shuvas yachin boaz, v'shuvas et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Rav, I think in general is enough of changing halacha from when the morning moves to Eretz Yisrael, meaning like especially Sephardi halacha shouldn't change to Israeli halacha. A big debate between him and Herzog. So is that following through here? Is
well, he said that Tamarim should be Sephardi.
Right, when he said here. So
right.
I'm not sure if it necessarily plugs into a general issue that people leave that for a different discussion because there's too many details to have to work out about that. So, in any event, still he continues to go on about this, just skip a little bit. It says, and you can add another detail here. It says, "B'shuva acheres harachti b'siat Yishmael l'chiyach shdas kam b'poskim shebezin sheposku l'chof sabal l'garish al pi'ez a poskim." That if a bezin decides to be kofa, based on Poskim, afilu kadidin, even if the maisa they were wrong, that we get musa shalokidin, and therefore it's a good that is puzzle, and haget puzzle of the rabbanim. I don't have to agree with it. It says that the psol is a rabbanim
psol. Or that it's not puzzle of the rabbanim?
That the psol is rabbanim. Even if they made a mistake, that Bezdin decided based on the view of Poskim to be kofa, and they were kofa in a way that was not justified, so yes, it's possible, but possible only the rabbanim. So that's also going to affect, as he goes on to say, that we can also then throw in different svaras to be more makel about what we consider that counts. And now this next line is very crucial. When we call shekein the kfiyah shebizman hazeh she'ena kfiyas peshutim. Right, this is what we'll get to next week, that he's saying that the kfiyah nowadays is of a different standard. That once upon a time they used to hit him with sticks, and that's really not going to be tired out of him, that's really aggressive, and nowadays that's not what's done, so all the more so he's going to say that's also a factor to be a little bit more makeup and to assume that we're not actually talking about real fear. So here, what are we talking about? You can't be surprised that this isn't called fear. What are we talking about here in Israel? Talking about going to jail. It says, what are we talking about? Elav Yeshiva Beis HaSoha. Okay, but ain called Indian being based on sour shows my name. No, the based on sour shows money not called me. The country clubs are saying that you can't compare a contemporary jail to what jail used to be. Jail used to be really bad. Nowadays, jail, okay, got that yummy. So he's basically saying that even that is not so sure actually rises to the level of fear that you have to worry about its impact. So the Havale Kasaf Kasfek Sveka Bidrabana. Since the Psul Bidrabana and putting all this together is like a Sveik Sveka.
It's like the recently there was a homeless man or something who stole like a 20-cent item from the store in order to go to jail because you get free room and board and food. And it would be much easier for him than having to live on the street. So in some ways, people would prefer to go to jail.
Okay.
In some situations.
All right, that's just something to think about. And, also, if he'd prefer to go to jail than stay in his marriage, it also says something. Mm-hmm. Right, so we'll get to that next week also, you know, that in general, this is a question we have to figure out, you know, what does kfiyah to divorce really mean? So if he'd rather be in jail and stay with his wife than ready, then the question how much kfiyah is we're talking about. In any event, so he goes on to say here, the culture came to Shasad Chak, the Makam Igun Kazol, since we're talking about Igun, we're talking about Shasad Chak, so it's all more reason to be Mako. That there are many who are mekel, whether they think it's mekel or din, or they think it's takana. Even this is what we called attention to yesterday, that even the Rush who disagrees wrote to the Diavet, whatever is done is done. It's a little bit loaded language because ase ase means what's done is done. But also means get Nerusa, which is puzzle, so it's a little bit confusing language. Chen Kasav Harash Betz, in the Skar should be get Kazet Tinasa Lechatilo. So that's the position of Harash Betz, that again, like this should allow marriage Lechilo. Galachas Kamu Kamu, believe don't be done. Shunasu and Hayabal Karachas Lisha. In this case, since she was 14 in the first place, all the more so. All right, then he goes on to question the marriage itself, that he was planning through threats, and therefore all the more so. She was very young, she didn't know what she was getting into, etc., etc. And then he goes on to say, and this is very interesting, that you know, very often, so we talk about how, on the other hand, we have a very clear attitude in Chazal and in literature that there's a great effort put Makom Igun, that anytime there's a concern of Igun, that we have to worry very much to find whatever Tzad Heter we can find. So normally the response to that is that that's talking about the classical lagunas of the Gemara where the husband is missing and we're trying to establish that he's dead. And it's often maintained that this doesn't apply to the situations of recalcitrant husband. So it's just noteworthy that here, if you read the rest of this, we're going to run out of time. But Ravaja is very clear in his language here that he is applying that kind of language to recalcitrant husbands in general. That that all of the language that you find in Poskim and in Gemara is about the tremendous concern, that we have to be very careful in order to avoid situations of igun. And there's no greater shasad chak than this. that all the consequence of the culture came is Manim Halalu, she wants to rob him, rob a person, it's not to let's do it. He's concerned also that she's just going to run off anyway, so then that's also something that we have to worry about. So here, Raja is factoring in all of this in terms of various tzirufim that have to be factored in. So just to skip to the end. So we see also that the person is really acting on his desire just to give a torture. She's also making threats that she's just going to go off without the guy. And there's no chance of there being any kind of resolution here, no matter what's going on. The tzir of Kosvaris Anal, so there he says, just to read the end, that all these svaris together, Pasakni Bakov Bezin Yafal Ofal Maisa Lachim to the Balagarish, Ad Shem Rotsan. So here in his case, so says Ravaja that he's ready to say the actual Tfir. Bozeh Heskin Gam Rosh Beis Dinein Hagon Hagogol Mir Ruben Katz Shlita. Have you ever heard of Ruben Katz? Ruben Katz was the author of the Sefer Dego Ruben. Ruben, he was the Rav of Pesach Tikva. And his son was a Rebbe here at YU. He passed away, Rebbe, I guess, about 10, 12 years ago. Rav Nochel Katz, who was still here when I was in college. So Rav Nochel Katz's father is Reuven Katz, Rebbe Reuven. Here Rav Adja says that Rebbe Reuven agreed with him as well. He's not a Sephardic, he's not just the Father Rambam. Uvios to Habal HaKosh, Ahiksha Es Arko, Vimitz Es Lavovo, Vuhavu Lagarish, Yama Yachab Saka Din Lakamon, so then he should be taken to jail in order to make sure that he will follow the psak of the Bezdin. So what happened after sitting in jail for a few days, he agreed to divorce his wife, Aget Sudara, Yedenu, Siat Shmai, Mosul Tlasik, etc., etc. Okay, Behutra, Havisha, Vinasa, the whole gather, etc., etc. Fine. So what do you see? What's the takeaway from the Vajra's Tshuva? A lot of different takeaways, right? You see just, on the one hand, there is a general consensus that we're not ready as a tzibur to follow the Psak of the Rambam straight out. We say Ma'ez Salai is grounds for Kfiya, but at the same time, there are many other components to factor in. And you see that when the other components factor in, sometimes that makes a difference. And Vajra focusing on just the consequences here, he assumes that it would only be possible with Rabbanan, and that's also a reason to be more makel. The marriage is under false pretenses in the first place, that itself could be grounds for kfiya. So all of that he takes into consideration to say that kfiya could be justified, including his assumption that what they use as kfiya, it doesn't rise to the level of kfiya. So God willing, next week we'll pick up that discussion, what does call kfiya and what's not called kfiya, the prenup that we advocate, why is that not an issue of kfiya, so monetary pressure is a major issue we're going to have to get to. And what I think emerges, again, from this discussion, so what we see here is that there is a value that's clearly being conveyed here, that even if the get is not actually subject to kfiya, but there still are major halachic values that are being disregarded if the husband will stay in such a situation. So at the very least, the Bezdin is going to make that clear to him. And at the very least, the society as a whole, Jewish society as a whole, has to also show that they care about these values and do what they can in order to transmit that that's the case, and that that's not necessarily something that we call kfiya, but rather a conveying of the mitzvah or chiyuv as the Bezdin has defined it. Okay, so again, tomorrow, 11:30, Yom HaSmut from Parsha, and we will...